welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 132. We're going to recap some news on a Tuesday night for you and give you a nice little Bloom board to see where things lie here at the beginning of May compared to the start of the season. All kinds of fun stuff like that and more. Before we get there, you can find me on Twitter at BDIntric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are you doing, my friend?
Doing great, man. Little worried about the mascot. We got to put out a little call for my man, our guy Luis Rengifo, who has been, I guess, sick for
that's the word on the street, the
better part of a week. So I don't know if any listeners out there want to get him an IV or what we should do for him, but we got to get him. Got to get him back.
I'm worried about it. If it's like the Kyber Ruiz situation where he's gonna lose like 30 pounds and have to work his way back. He doesn't have 30 pounds to give.
You making those Montezuma revenge jokes a week or so ago, that may have been in vain.
Yep. It might have been in vain. That is very, very true. But other than Rengifo, how's it going? You check out these days?
Other than that, I'm healthy. And actually, fantasy-wise, this has been the most satisfying week putting players back onto my teams, like Justin Steele, Nick Pivetta, Bellinger, Friedel, they're all back, which is good. We'll talk about a couple others coming up, but for as much injury pain lately, it's been nice throwing those guys back in.
Yeah, like you said, we'll talk some more. There's a couple more guys coming back. Bellinger came back on Tuesday, and a few more guys we'll talk about. Even some aren't on the list. If you check out my Substack, I wrote them up already for tonight, that there's about four or five more guys starting rehab assignments this weekend. So, like, it's really going to be nice coming up here if things keep going in the right direction, where we might feel normal for a little bit before stuff gets rough again. Maybe we'll see
till they all come back too early and get hurt again. And
pretty much because most of these are like soft tissue injuries and stuff, so we know how that goes. But until then, we wait and see. But let's hit up on some of that news here, Mr. Bloomfield, and we'll start with one that took place on Tuesday evening before we recorded. Wilson Contreras is going to be out 6 to 8 weeks with a fractured arm because he was not taught properly how to stand far enough back from the batter in the batter's box and took a swing from JD Martinez off of his arm. So he is down and out for quite some time.
I don't think I've seen that before. You see plenty of, catcher's interference or whatever, where just the swing kind of just nicks the glove. JD Martinez just straight got all arm and was not, in my opinion, was not JD's fault. I know he was kind of getting beat up over it, but Wilson was just way too far out there. So it sucks. I think given the time frame, Wilson Contreras is probably a drop. Maybe if you've been fortunate injury-wise in 15s, you can maybe hold on to a third catcher. That's always tough, though. I mean, it's time for your guy. It's time for your guy to shine, Ivan Herrera. So,
It's your time, kid. You got about a two-month window to really show people what's up. So, I'm hoping he goes, because he looked real good at first. And he's kind of been slumping a bit, so he's got a long leash right here to see what he can do, and I'm looking forward to it. So, yeah, I know he was dropped in some leagues recently, so he might be able to get some Ivan back. The only caveat, like in 15s, the return value on catchers on the bench are not great right now. So the zero from Wilson Contreras might be better than your other options. So it's definitely league dependent. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yes, that is true. There are times where a zero catcher, especially in 15s, is better than. I'm trying to pull catchers' names off the top of my head. It's not my forte. Maybe we'll go Omar Narvaez. Better than starting Omar Narvaez every day.
Hat tip. Like a Freddie Fermin might be out there. Patrick Bailey's might have gotten dropped soon on the concussion IL. Stuff along those lines you can kind of take peeks at and see what's out there. Yan Gomes is starting to play better again when Miguel Amaya struggles. Maybe jump on that train. There are a few. Corey Lee, I think we talked about recently. That could be one to take a peek at in Chicago. So there are options out there.
Two hits tonight, Corey Lee did. Yeah. So, and even Ivan Herrera himself is only 39% rostered in NFBC 12-teamers. So in 12-teamers, go for him.
Yep. Go get him, folks. Make it happen. Some good news now after we started out with that. I mentioned Bellinger earlier, returned and went deep on Tuesday night. Seiya Suzuki is heading to Iowa. Rehab assignment Wednesday, Thursday, with the expectations of returning Friday at the latest Saturday for for the Chicago Cubs. So we might have Seiya back this weekend, Bloomfield, which feels oh so good.
Would absolutely be one of those guys that I was referring to earlier that I cannot wait to get him back in. It sounds like Seiya is going to rehab, yeah, like two games and then be back Friday, maybe Saturday. So that is sweet. Again, I'm just like tarnished, I guess, from too many injuries. I just hope it's not too early. Hope it's not too early coming back for Seiya Suzuki. But he has dealt with something like this before, so you would think he knows when to come back. Probably the end of Mike Tauchman's stint, yes. Somewhat productive stint in right field near the top of the lineup for the Cubs. But we will welcome Seiya back with open arms.
We will welcome Seiya back with open arms. Bush had the walk-off on Tuesday night. Maybe Bellinger goes to first base and we see some more play in the outfield. There are scenarios because Bush has not been playing well either. He had his hot streak and that's kind of cooled down quite a bit. Ian Happ's playing bad, but Happ isn't going anywhere. So
no.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out because Christopher Morel's amazing and no one's touching him. So,
they can fit. I mean, Bellinger DH tonight. Bush could stay at first. Pete Crow Armstrong in center. Like that.
Maybe work, PCA. But... PCA could be the one that goes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they want him overly out there. Impressive. I think no, they do too.
He hasn't, and his defense is really good. But I don't know. We'll see.
We will see. Mason Black made his debut on Monday for the Giants. I just wanted to highlight it because people might see the stat line of 4 1/3, 5 earned, 4 strikeouts and be like, oh, this guy's horrible. There's a little more to it. I'll let Ryan talk about it first because he kind of, you know, had a little skin in the game.
of course.
Yeah, there's more to this one with Mason Black.
Yeah, so in Towers, you can pick up. It's not like an NFBC thing where they have to be called up. Towers, you can pick up really any minor leaguer at any time. The caveat is they have to be in your starting lineup for that upcoming week. So when I saw the news that Mason, I'm going to keep trying to call him Tyler Black, when Mason Black was called up on Sunday, I took the plunge, went like $40, I think unopposed. I don't think anyone else in Tout bid on Mason Black, but... looked really good, I thought, against a tough Phillies lineup through four innings. Actually, it was a cool start, too, because he's from he went to Lehigh. He's grew up a Phillies fan.
Yep.
And his whole family was there and friends and all that. It was a pretty cool moment until the fifth inning when he kind of got blown up. And the big thing was in the minors, Black, I don't think, had pitched over five innings or over, what, like 70 pitches?
70 pitches.
Like that. So he was running right up against that limit. Black was in that fifth inning, and that's tough to do against the Phillies, who are just on fire right now. So, agree. The box score does not do justice for what Mason Black, how he looked. I'm not saying this is going to be like a Christian Scott or, you know, some super high ceiling guy, but I think Mason Black could be a pretty decent like mid rotation starter for the Giants and for our teams.
Yep, I agree, and that's what I wanted to bring up is it was around pitch like 71 or 72 when things unraveled. And, you know, eventually the kids got to grow through that. There's no doubt about it, but like Ryan said, it was the Philadelphia Phillies in Philadelphia. Not to mention he probably had a little adrenaline in those early pitches, which would be different than a regular start. So I'm really curious to see how he throws on Saturday at home in San Francisco against the Reds. That should be a fun one. So the kid's talented, should stick around for a little bit. They need innings. They need innings badly. So like I would be good with a 6-man rotation, honestly, to extend things throughout the season for these guys. But we'll see what the Giants decide to do. And Black should stay up until at least Blake Snell comes back, who will be throwing a live batting practice here in a couple days before they said he might not need a rehab start, but he might. I think he'll need a rehab start. It's just me. But we could see Snell back next week, and that makes the Black thing more interesting. But time will obviously tell on that one.
That's probably my biggest worry is that Black goes back to AAA once Snell returns, but I don't know.
I'm hoping that he's here to stay for the fact they made a 40-man spot for him. That's kind of my thought process. They could have left him off the 40 if he's only a 1 or 2 start rental. So
that makes sense. That makes sense.
That's my goal on that one. All right, Stephen Kwan, Cleveland Guardians, out 4 weeks with his hamstring injury, so a month for those keeping track on a calendar. Kyle Manzardo got called up. He is 0-7 so far with a 71% strikeout rate. What's your thoughts on this scenario?
So with the Manzardo thing, I mean, so much to cook because it was early in the week. If he struggles, the fab price is going to be super cheap. He's great. Fat price is going to be crazy. And he has struggled, like you said, with five strikeouts and seven at bats, which is quite bad. I don't know, like Esteban Florial is leading off against right-handed pitching right now, which, yeah, you want to amass at bats, but do you want to amass Esteban Florial's at bats? I don't know. Maybe I'm being a little too harsh on him. No, I'm not. Nope, I'm not. Never mind. No. So from that aspect, I don't see much there. What do you do with Kwan?
It's 4 weeks, so I try to hold. Kwan? It's like the old the kind of rule is a month or less. I try to hold. Month or more, we have a discussion. So I'm looking to hold for Kwan because he was playing very, very well. You're not going to be able to replace that. If he can come back in a month and you can survive till then, you're going to be happy to have him back. So I'm trying to hold on Stephen Kwan.
He was running. Yeah, you wonder how much he'll run coming back. It was only 3-for-6 on the base pass, Kwan was. But, I agree. Especially 28 runs and a .353 batting average.
Yep.
Like that's awfully good. I try and hold as well.
That's very, very good. As they'd say, Wyatt Langford is not very, very good so far. He will be someday, just not yet. He went on the IL with a hamstring injury. He's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks because they said it's between a grade 1 and a grade 2 hamstring strain. So he hits the IL. He's been playing very, very poorly. Would you drop Wyatt Langford?
I would. Yeah, I would. And it's been a, just taking a wider view on prospects. I think it was Wyatt Langford and the two Jacksons, Jackson Churio and Jackson Holiday, were the, I believe, three. I hope I'm not leaving someone out.
Probably Junior Caminero.
Maybe Caminero, who, the Jacksons and Wyatt Langford. It's been a bad year to, at least so far, invest in rookies.
Our strategies work so far.
No upside. So the counterpoint to that would be like, and this isn't the same thing, but this is like, look at all the 22-year-olds who have just taken a huge leap forward with MLB experience. So, yes, we avoided like Wyatt Langford. We avoided Jackson Churio, Jackson Holiday. We also avoided, Gunnar Henderson, Ellie De La Cruz. Yeah. I know there's a couple, like Ezekiel Tovar is another example. A few other like 22, 23-year-olds. CJ Abrams, not avoided, but there has been that like, so while the top prospects this year have struggled, the like second year MLB top prospects from a year ago as a whole have been pretty damn good. Jordan Walker notwithstanding.
But you know what I'll counterpoint that with? You know what some of those guys did last year? They finished strong, showing us they can do it, which is our argument saying all along, prove it to me.
Yep.
Like Gunnar Henderson, I think, proved it in the end. I don't think we expected him to be this good.
Same with CJ Abrams.
Two to three rounds later, we're probably interested in Gunnar Henderson. He was we didn't think he'd be this good type thing.
Yep.
Evan Phillips of the Los Angeles Dodgers hit the IL on Sunday with a hamstring injury. They're expecting him to miss the minimal amount of time, give or take. You know how that goes. We'll wait and see. But Daniel Hudson was a popular waiver wire ad this week. I actually dropped him in one league because I don't believe in the closing situation in the Dodgers. And Alex Vesia got the save on Monday night. Daniel Hudson didn't even pitch on Monday night. Trinan pitched the eighth. So I think it's a revolving door of like 3 or 4 guys might get saves over this period.
Trinan pitched the eighth. Vesia was situational. Pitched the ninth against, I think, 3 lefties. Maybe 2 out of 3 lefties. And Hudson, it was interesting. Hudson didn't even pitch.
Didn't even pitch. And while you have his page up there, or at least something, can you tell me what Hudson did his last 2 outings?
It's putting me on the spot. What, he get lit up?
Blew saves in both outings.
Oh, yeah. Friday, 27 pitch, blown save. It's not great. It's not great. You dropped him. Jesus.
Yeah. Yep.
Bold.
I picked up Frankie Montas.
Oh, well, there you go.
I call that a long-term investment.
I mean, Daniel Hudson's been good this year, though. Even with the recent blow-ups, .360 ERA, 25% strikeout minus walk. He's not walking anybody. I still think Hudson gets the majority of the saves. But again, if it is, like you said, if it is near the minimum for Evan Phillips, that's 2 weeks. maybe the Dodgers do win every single game. They were up 8-1 against Miami while we were recording, so probably no save chance there. And then, yeah, maybe Hudson gets like half of the saves, so maybe you're only getting like two saves, which does matter, but it felt like some of the bidding was a bit more, expecting a bit more than that.
That's where I was going with that. So, yeah, we'll see where it goes, but hopefully it's the minimal stay for Evan Phillips because he's been helping me quite a bit this season. Joe Musgrove to the IL with he's not good at pitching / a right elbow inflammation that also came back with tendonitis. I've heard a couple different examples of what his injury is so far. Regardless, he's probably out 3 to 4 weeks is what we're looking at here, give or take. What are you doing with Joe Musgrove if he's out a month?
He's gone.
Yep.
He's gone for me. Just because I don't know what he looks like coming back, you know.
I have a guess.
Yeah, I also have a hunch. I also have a hunch. So, yeah, he's probably gone. Who's in? Randy Vasquez?
Randy Vasquez got the start on Tuesday night in Wrigley and pitched okay.
Six Ks, no walks, 4 1/3. Just feel like Randy Vasquez is just one of those streamers who could.
He's a jag.
He's a jag, could get you destroyed. 4.60 ERA in AAA last year. Did not pitch well in AAA this year in 15 innings. So yeah, Randy Vasquez, a jag, and you don't want jags.
I remember he came up with the Yankees. He'd have a couple outings. You're like, okay, this is good. Then you have a couple like what just happened outings. He's got strikeout upside, but he also has control issues that turn into home run issues and turn into a problem if he's not on. So that's always my concern with Randy Vasquez. Lubob, more good news here. See, we're going back and forth with you guys here. Good news, Luis Robert, he's expected to start a rehab assignment at the end of this week, and they're expecting him back by the middle of the end of next week. Like, he's progressing very nicely. So Luis Robert could be back on your fantasy squads if you're patient enough to hold him, which most people were, but not all. You could be getting him back next week.
Yeah, most people weren't. I actually, so for our Bloom Board exercise tonight, when we'll get there, but when we talk about the ADP fallers, I actually took out all the injured guys because that's, you know, doesn't make for great podcasting. Luis Robert was one of the guys I took out, and Luis Robert in the two in-season drafts that took place last week went for an average pick of 189, low 169, high 209. So at least in those two drafts, and we'll get into what those were in a little bit, the room had kind of given up on Luis Robert. And sounds like that's, well, we'll see. If there's the king of the I came back, but I'm still hurting day to day.
Yeah.
Luis Robert's at least the prince. He's up there.
He's the prince. The White Sox are the court jesters of everything. So
yeah, Eloy is the king.
Eloy is the, well, he's the walking dead. So we'll see what they do there in Chicago. It's one of those things. Kevin Hastings says he was the, I won't use the word because I don't think he's an idiot, but he says he's one of the guys that dropped Robert prior to the lower timeline. Yeah, the initial timeline was a while. It was like a couple months.
Wasn't that a Bob Nightingale tweet that it was, or am I thinking another injury? It was,
no, Bobby Nightingale said it was, yeah, it was Nightingale had a Lou Bob tweet. You're right.
Do you think Tommy Pham stays in the lineup? He has to, right?
Yes.
When Lou Bob comes back?
Yes. He's going to hit second still. Dude's amazing.
Don't act all. This is the White Sox we're talking about.
If they get rid of Tommy Pham will burn the building down. It'll be like Office Space. He'll be looking for a stapler in the basement.
Well, who do they sit? Eloy DH, is it Benintendi or Pham or Gavin Sheets?
Gavin Sheets, that's easy.
Gavin Sheets playing right field. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, I hope you're right. Gavin.
It better be. If they get rid of Tommy Pham, that will be one of the most comical things on the face of the planet. That'll be amazing if that takes place. I get a better spot of Tommy Pham playing corner infield before they get rid of him.
All right. I mean, I don't want to say get rid of him, but like if he becomes a part-timer.
Yeah. We'll see. But
I won't speak these negative thoughts into existence.
If they get rid of Tommy Pham, I'll be very angry, but nothing should surprise me with the White Sox at the same time. Maybe they should try trading him now. Maybe that'd be a good trick for them. Start trading Tommy Pham now and see how we could see the good Doc Mike Carter go nuts on Twitter when the White Sox do something else. So much fun like that. Trey Turner. This one sucked. Trey Turner's out 6 weeks, hamstring injury. 6 weeks. That's a pretty severe injury if it takes 6 weeks to heal. Plus, he likes to use his legs. So what's your thoughts on this scenario? It's like very difficult to drop a first or early second round player. So I'm not saying that's what you're doing, but 6 weeks is a long time.
It is, but yeah, you can't cut bait. At least I can't, unless you have just severe injury problems. I do worry. And I've said this about Quan. I do worry about the running game when Trey Turner comes back. That lineup is so good. At least right now, I don't think he even needs to run. And yeah, so Edmundo Sosa, shortstop.
He's playing more. He's playing more. The guy I wanted to throw out to you, Whit Merrifield's playing more through this.
The Whit, two hit Whit.
Yeah, like he's hit safely in 7 straight games that he's been a part of, with 3 stolen bases, got a home run. Does this interest you at all?
Yeah, it does. If he starts playing.
Yeah, I'm thinking there's something there. Like he's played in like 3 of the last 4, 3 of the last 5. If he starts playing even more regularly, that could be. I think he'll play for sure versus left-handed pitching, but something to keep an eye on, I think.
Yeah, no, that is a good call because, yeah, Merrifield has played the last 2 games against righties, left field, second base. So,
yeah.
Bottom of the lineup, but I don't care.
Not in that lineup. That's cool. I'll take it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Sign me up. So, just want to throw that name out there because he's available on a lot of waiver wires, and he could be that could be a nice little month-long wit run in that one. So,
yeah. I mean, he's 35. He's up there, but you never know when. Yeah, you go on a stolen base binge, and Philadelphia will run, so.
100%. So, someone to keep in mind on that one. Last bit of news I have here, and there's plenty of news going around these days, but since we've last talked, Ryan, Luis Arraez was traded to the San Diego Padres for 4 prospects. We don't have to get into all of that, unless you really want to. But Luis Arraez, you know, stud player, going to DH a lot for the Padres. It doesn't really have any impact, I guess, on his fantasy value, but I guess maybe if we find somebody on the Marlins worth the darn, I don't know.
Yeah, that was my takeaway, is like, again, this is scraping the bottom of the barrel, but I wrote up Vidal Brujan in my fab column at HQ this week. Vidal Brujan has been playing, yes, the last 5 games in a row, so basically since the trade, and against 1 lefty, 4 righties, mostly at second, 1 game, a couple games at third. I'm not saying this guy's, you know, Vidal Brujan has done basically nothing in his career in the major league level, but this is a guy who was I want to say top 20 consensus fantasy prospect, and he's still, the hell is he? Oh no, he's not 35. That's Whit Merrifield. He's 26. So like he's starting to get up there, but it's, you know, it wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world if Vidal Brujan kind of caught fire. The K rate is awesome. The bat to ball skills are fantastic. 8% strikeout rate. He doesn't chase, doesn't whiff, hits ground balls, and that's what you want from a speedster. There's going to be no power. Not going to be many RBI or hell even runs with Miami, but if you are challenged for bags, and this isn't, like I said, this isn't totally a one-trick pony with Vidal Brujan, I think the batting average could be okay. I know this is a little bit of a stretch, but at least he's worth looking at with a good week this week.
Yeah, I don't hate that at all. Lots of quote-unquote pedigree with Brujan that could make it interesting. I'm already scared for when Jazz gets traded, because he's leading off and playing very well right now, like very well. So he's going to get traded somewhere and probably hit like 7th, and I'm very scared.
You think he gets dealt?
Oh, yeah. If they can get anything close to what they got for Arraez, he's gone. Like they are cleaning house right now.
They did seem to get a decent haul. No, again, knowing nothing about prospects, but just from what I read, they did seem to get a decent haul of volume of prospects for yes, a DH with no power. So
yeah, they're doing the volume over like quantity over quality thing, because they need so much quantity, which makes sense for them. Like if 1 out of every 4 hits, that's a good thing for them scenario.
Yep.
So it makes sense in that regard that people are like, oh, they didn't even get a top prospect. Well, they got like the Padres 3rd, 6th, and 9th overall prospects, plus a reliever they just signed from overseas they're excited about this offseason. So I call that, if you're trying to rebuild something, that's not shabby. We'll see how that plays out. Again, neither one of us are prospect guys, though, so grain of salt with that one. All right, that'll wrap up the news for tonight. We'll have more for you guys on Thursday. Hopefully more good news. Like I said, lots of guys are rehabbing. Lots of guys are coming back from the IL right now. Hopefully our waiver wire column stuff on Thursday means like, hey, just who are you dropping this week? That could be a great conversation compared to other stuff. That's the dream we all have. But until then, it's Tuesday night, which means Bloom Board time, Bloomfield. What do we got this week?
Oh, man. Off my game. I don't even have it set up yet.
Well, what he's going to talk about, why he sets it up, there he goes. He's got it now. What do you got, Bloomfield?
All right. So we are looking at a green board and a red board. So what we're going to do here, there were two drafts that took place last week. One is the Yahoo Friends and Family draft. And shout out to Scott Pianowski of Yahoo, who provided these draft results. I reached out to him, and he gave those over. And an NFBC draft. I don't know who was in the NFBC draft. Honestly, you know, whatever. Doesn't really matter. But there were two in
all their names. All
what's
of them.
That?
I want a board with all the names on the top, please.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Let's rehash that debacle. I can probably guess who half of the NFBC league was, but
yeah, just a hunch.
But I don't think anyone really cares. So there were two drafts last week, and I just thought it was interesting to compare the ADP. Combine those two drafts. They're both 5x5 leagues. The only difference between the leagues is the Yahoo Friends and Family is a 13-team league with one catcher. So some of the catchers, much to Bubba's chagrin, Bubba was like, where's Ryan Jeffers? The catcher ADP is low because one of the two leagues was a one catcher league, which makes sense. And it was a 13-team league compared to the NFBC 15-teamer. But what I did was I averaged the ADP between those two leagues that took place last week and compared that to the preseason main event drafts, which was basically taking place in March. And I took the highest risers in terms of pick value. We've done this exercise a few times in draft season in pick value, highest risers and the furthest fallers. So for those following on the stream, our risers are in green, our faders are in red. And as I alluded to with Luis Robert earlier, pretty much all the top faders were guys who were injured. So I removed basically any injured guys so we could actually talk about faders due to on-field performance. So it's just interesting to see any draft like this where it's been a month. It's crazy to see like how much has changed in a month. A month ago, if you told us, for example, Gunnar Henderson was going 11th overall, we'd be like, what the hell? It's fascinating to see how much can change in just over a month of games.
Yep. That's totally fair. I honestly don't know what's more surprising, Jason Foley or Gunnar Henderson, stuff like that. That's the fun world we're in right now, but, we'll hit on some of these. Let's start with Gunnar Henderson's teammate though. Jordan Westberg, preseason 313. You're using him as like a middle infielder or a corner infielder at third base. If you're late in drafts, that was kind of your philosophy. If you drafted him, he went to average of pick 85 in these early drafts. That is quite a jump for Jordan Westberg. A couple weeks ago, he was player of the week. Still hitting 286 on the year with six home runs. Overall production has slowed down the last couple weeks, but the overall stat line's pretty, pretty good. So what are your thoughts on a top a 100 Jordan Westberg?
It was surprising to me, but that's also because I don't have, this is just one of those kind of under the radar guys, at least to me. And maybe I'm not paying enough attention to Baltimore. I just don't have Jordan Westberg on my teams. And all we hear about is Gunnar Henderson, Natalie Rutschman. And for a while there, Colton Cowser, who's also on this list a little bit further down. I didn't hear very much about Jordan Westberg. So when I saw this as the top riser, I was like, oh, whoa, six homers, four bags and 286 batting average. Like that's pretty good. Hitting for power, 10 barrels for those six homers. And Baltimore is letting Jordan Westberg run, which is great. He's 4-for-6 so far on the base paths. But like kind of like you alluded to, Bubba, it's been a little bit up and down. Jordan Westberg had a hot week and then didn't have a, you know, last 7 days. I know we're splitting hairs at this point, but that's going to happen with prospects. I think a top 100 is a little pricey. I'm trying to look at other like infielders who were going around Jordan Westberg. Here's a good one. Nico Horner has the exact same ADP as Jordan Westberg. And Nico was fourth, fifth rounder in 15-team leagues just a month ago.
That is interesting. Yeah, because I was just pulling up since the 22nd of April, Westberg's only hitting 213 over that stretch, 286 on the season. But strikeout rate's the same basically as the entire season. So he's not striking out a ton. It's, the balls aren't falling for him like they were earlier, which I'm still cool with. Like, he's going to go through his ups and downs. You probably don't notice him very often, but if you look at that first place team in Tout Wars, he's been starting every day on that roster.
Oh, so, Jesus. There we go.
He's pretty good ball player.
Did you draft him?
Yeah. One of my last picks.
Bastard, man.
To play corner infield for me.
Well done. Yep. Well done.
Yep. That's this guy. Jason Foley. I joked around about it because I don't think many people were looking to draft Jason Foley unless you're doing a total spec with one of your last picks in a draft. His 445 ADP says all of that in one. Like in 12s, you draft 360 players, folks. So if you're in 15s, he barely makes the cut if we're going there. 128 ADP in these two midseason drafts. That's because Jason Foley has been the lockdown closer for the Detroit Tigers. He's racked up 9 saves already this season, decent ratios. Strikeouts aren't bad. What are your thoughts on this one, though? Because it's still a Detroit Tigers closer, which doesn't leave me feeling great. And he's scuffled a bit over his last few outings where there's been rumblings of Alex Lang coming home.
Yes, and Alex Lang, I think, pitched. I don't have the scoreboard up for tonight. I don't think, I'm not sure if it was a save situation. No, they were up 4, the Tigers were, but I think Alex Lang pitched the 9th tonight with a 4-run lead. And Jason Foley has not pitched since May 3rd, so it's been 4 days. So I don't know what's going on there. Maybe it's nothing. I think, I don't have the closers going around Jason Foley, but that seems a little too rich for me, given the history of Jason Foley.
Yeah, that seems a little excitable on that one. Another one that seems a little rich for me is Ronel Blanco. I know he's been great this year. Not going to deny those numbers, for crying out loud. He's throwing a no-hitter. You drafted him, now you don't get the no-hitter. They'll just remember that. 209 ERA on the season, 418 xFIP, almost a K per 9. What's your thoughts on Ronel Blanco, who it took him until his age 30 season to break out?
Yeah, and I don't know. Yeah, I'm not buying this. I'm not buying this. The Sierra for Ronel Blanco, it says he has pitched more like a low 4s ERA guy, including that no-hitter, which, you know, isn't bad, but like Nick Lodolo is the next starting pitcher going after Ronel Blanco, and I'd rather have Nick Lodolo
all day long,
every day of the week. So yeah. Justin Steele, well, that's not really fair, but Justin Steele is the starting pitcher going ahead of Ronel Blanco. I say that's not fair
because Tanner Houck's at 136 I see on this sheet. I'd take Tanner Houck.
Yep. Agreed. I just think Ronel Blanco still has a double-digit walk rate, a league average swinging strike rate, doesn't really throw strikes that much, a 13% strikeout minus walk. Like, this is a guy who's just living on an extremely low BABIP, extremely high left on base rate. And like you said, Bubba, it's a 30-year-old Ronel Blanco. I think we know who this guy is.
Yep, I'm with you. And Joe Arrico mentioned he has a 185 BABIP and 89.5% left on base rate. There's a lot of things that point to trouble ahead, folks. Trouble ahead on that one. Yep. Wouldn't be surprised if we see him on a bloom board later on this season that involves some movers and shakers and certain
probably
stats.
Not a good one. Probably not a good one.
No. Like a couple weeks ago, we talked about, you know, Colin Ray regressing. That's coming fast, folks. Coming fast last couple starts. So it's there. Jared Jones. Now, this is a fun talking point because some people think he's the next coming of Christ and some think he's if you go on to next coming to Pedro Martinez, I'll go that direction.
Who is kind of regarded as Christ?
That's what I'm saying. It's like
I got you.
Jared Jones went around pick 317 at the end of the draft season, as high as 91, or his average of 91 this last two drafts. And I know I'm not alone on this one, that a lot of people probably assume Jared Jones should be going a lot higher.
I am one of those. I think Jared Jones is a relative bargain at 91. I know Joe Arrico is in the chat, and I believe I saw a tweet from Joe earlier who did a top 10 starting pitchers. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Joe, but I had Jared Jones like at 13th this season. That feels about right. I might even go higher, just because these skills are are completely electric, and I'm not too worried about workload. Jared Jones threw 126 innings in 2023 across AA and AAA. That's a year after 122 innings in high A. So, like, the workload is there for Jared Jones to, I think, go 150, 160. Pittsburgh probably will shut him down in September. But, like, if you get a sliver of what Jared Jones has done for the next 4 months, I think he's certainly worth a 91 ADP. Trying to look at starting pitchers around Jared Jones. We've got, let's see, Ranger Suarez at 102.
That's a fun comparison.
That's a fun comparison. I would take Jared Jones just ahead of Jared Jones. What about Sonny Gray at an ADP of 80?
I love Sonny Gray. He's doing great things for me this year. I think Jared Jones has a ceiling. I'd probably go Jared Jones, but that's real close. Sonny Gray's just old reliable out there, and his strikeouts are up this year.
I should do a board on him. Jared Jones has a 19% swinging strike and a 28% ball rate.
That's impressive.
Those are just numbers I'm kind of throwing out there, but like, I don't think I've seen a pitcher, starting pitcher, with that combination of whiffs and strikes thrown this deep into the season. That's
unbelievable. Get Waxman on that. He likes history charts. Get him on that.
I'll pass.
MC says Jones has been Strider. He leads MLB in K to walk and Sierra this year.
Yep.
Pretty impressive stuff there. Marcelo Zuna, I get it. He was 168 preseason. I think mainly because utility. People are kind of holding off on him. People said, screw that. He got up to 49 because he's hitting everything under the sun. One of the few guys, we talked before the show about the Braves offense. He's one of the few guys that's actually producing right now. So I can get behind that one.
I can too. And I think one of the lessons I'm learning this year, especially with like Otani, is don't let that UT only get in your way. Unless you're like me on my teams and I pick JD Martinez, who hits catcher's forearms more often than he hits baseballs. But should have gone with Ozuna. I'm fine with Ozuna at the price at what is the price? Yeah, 49. I think that's fine. Like the lineup will be unbelievable, I think, the rest of the way. Skill support, basically everything that he's done. And I think we don't give Marcelo Ozuna enough credit for what he did last year. I mean, all he needs to do is do what he did last year. He had 274, 40 home runs, 184 runs plus RBI. Like, that is just absurd. You're not getting any bags, but I think we can work around that.
Yeah, most utilities are not, unless you're Shohei Ohtani, so I think we're good in that regard. So yeah, I'm with you. I'm on board with this one. Gunnar Henderson's a fun one. You hit on it earlier. 36 ADP, so early third round at the end of draft season. 11th average ADP, so a first rounder in both drafts, essentially. And so far this year, 266 average, 10 homers, 6 steals, 26 runs, 24 RBIs. A marked improvement, especially on the base paths to me, like 10 total steals last year. So that stands out in a big way. But like, it's slowed down for a lot. Like, the Orioles in general have slowed down. So like, teams will slow down together, we've noticed. I still don't know if I go this early with Gunnar Henderson, but I get it at least.
I get it too. I mean, the hitters going after Gunnar, Aaron Judge, Yordan Alvarez. I mean, your typical first rounders, Jose Ramirez, Corbin Carroll, averaged at 20. I think this is a flaw in my game to say, no, I wouldn't take Gunnar Henderson this early. I think I need to believe and jump on what I was talking about earlier, these like 22, 23-year-olds with major league experience who are showing in front of our eyes improved skills. I think I would do Gunnar Henderson in the first round. I think he's a first rounder. The lineup's so good, and the skill, I mean, he is growing like crazy right now and doing it on the fly, and it's really good.
Yeah, like, I believe what he's doing, but I'd still go J-Ram over him personally.
Would you?
245, 7 homers, 5 steals, 24, 30, 11% strikeout rate. Like, I'll still go J-Ram, but I wouldn't fault anybody for Gunnar.
Yeah, I'd go Gunnar more. I think about it. I'd go Gunnar, but either one. Again, first round, there's no wrong picks.
Bryce Terang's getting the bump because he's running like crazy. But as a whole, if you look at Bryce Terang's profile, it's kind of the literally the holes in the swings we've talked about with Bryce Durang. He's actually still hitting 301. I thought that dropped even more. So that's not bad. Only two homers, 14 steals. He's doing it with the steals and the batting average. Not sure how sustainable that'll be all season for him with a 340 BABIP, but I guess anything's possible. But to go as high as 109, thoughts?
I mean, is he playing against lefties still? Or playing against lefties at all? I shouldn't say still. He did not start the most recent one. Like, I think you're getting a platoon bat.
Yep.
With no power, very little power.
Yep.
And to spend a top 110 pick on that, I don't think I would do it. I think you're buying the best 5-6 weeks that Bryce Durang will have this season. And in these leagues, you don't get those stats.
Agreed. I think it's a lot of that, and people are valuing his steals a lot, and steals should be valued. I'm not going to discount that, but I think we saw the peak stretch of what you're going to get from, like, I wouldn't be shocked if he has 14 steals the rest of the season if he platoons. So just keep that in mind. He should get more. He should get like 20 or so, but keep that in mind. Ranger Suarez, he's been amazing. 298 at the end of the regular season, 103 on average in these first two drafts. I love Ranger. I noticed I had him in a lot of my gladiators. Like, this is a dude I love late in drafts, but 103 without seeing the rest of the pitching pool is still pretty rich to me, because I know there's going to be a rough spot for Ranger Suarez.
Yeah, he's going around the likes of, let's see, Zach Eflin right behind him, Bailey Ober, Tanner Bibee, Ober, your boy, sure. Justin Steele. I think I'd take over Ranger Suarez. I'd take Suarez over Bibee. I would take Eflin over Suarez. I would take Suarez over Ober, I think. So, and that's the other kind of thing with these drafts. Like, it's just two drafts. You don't know, like, the starting pitching market in general, but so I guess it is a good exercise to kind of throw around the names that are going right around them. Given all that, I feel like it's a touch early for Ranger.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a touch early, but I don't know, man. Like, the improvements in the walk rate are legit. It's backed by improvements in the ball rate, which I always look at, and I'm always a sucker for elite ground ball rates, 58% for Ranger. Yep. On a team that is just hitting the crap out of the ball and giving him plenty of run support. So I don't know. I get it. It just feels like a buy high.
Yeah, it feels like a buy high. Like, I think he'll still be serviceable, but there's going to be a couple big hiccups coming your way at some point this season. That's going to be a little rough there. And it makes me think, like, I probably should ask this at the beginning to get your thoughts on this. If you're doing a draft, like, now, say there's a draft that comes up in the beginning of June, per se, would you be more prone to draft guys where the peripherals show that they've underachieved and be more aggressive in that regard? Or would you draft like these guys where you're sitting there going, like, would you draft the green side or the red side more often in this draft?
I would be drafting from the red side.
Yes. Okay.
That's where I would be drafting from the red side more for hitters, and for pitchers, I would be much more in tune with what they've done recently. So for hitters, I'd bet the regression and lean more on like the preseason, what I thought about them in the preseason. The pitchers, I'd be a little bit more apt to take a Ranger Suarez. It's a good question though. How would you do that same?
Yeah, probably. That's probably fair, because like, the more I think about it, trying to take pitchers on the falling side of things, they're probably falling for a very valid reason. So
we'll talk about some of those guys.
All right. So I'm not going to go down thing, this.
Just real quick on Ranger Suarez, the counter to what we were saying, Ranger Suarez was the number one starting pitcher, or is the number one starting pitcher in all of fantasy baseball right now, and he went outside the top 100. So that's the counterpoint.
Yep, that's pretty good. I'm going to skip James McArthur. It's another closer that's doing well. I just blew his second save, so we'll see how much longer that stays for. Colton Cowser, though, I want to hit on him real quick. Went as high as one, or on average of 139 in these two drafts. Obviously burst onto the scenes here recently, has quieted down quite a bit. Would you have been in on a Colton Cowser at this ADP?
No. And side note, I'm kind of digging the recent slump, because I don't get cow memes from you tweeted at me anymore when Colton Cowser does something good. So I appreciate that. I don't know. It's been quietly really bad for Colton Cowser. The strikeout rate, and I kind of want to compare him to Jordan Westberg. Maybe that's not fair, but they're on the same team. Like, the plate skills for Colton Cowser are so much worse than they are for they are for Westberg. 34% K rate, 15% swinging strike for Colton Cowser. Like, he's kind of getting eaten up. And I feel like this price, you're paying a bunch for what he already did.
Yep, I feel you there. Tyler O'Neill went around an average of 217 to finish the draft season. On average, in these two drafts, pick 82. He has 9 home runs, 22 runs, 13 ribbies, a stolen base, hitting 292. That's with a stint, with an injury. I think this is a very, very viable pick if you believe he stays healthy.
See, I can't. I can't believe he stays healthy. That's my problem with Tyler O'Neill. So I'm out. I would take, so like Teoscar Hernandez went 5 picks later. Trying to look other outfielders that went around Tyler O'Neill. Jazz Chisholm went 71, so like 10 picks earlier. Kyle Schwarber, which I don't, these are 5x5 average leagues, so went 72. Yeah,
I'd probably stay away from that one too.
Probably would do. I don't know. I'm probably out on O'Neill at that price, but that could come back to haunt me pretty quickly. He has been awesome. It's just the health.
You know who else has been awesome is Mason Miller, who went on an average of pick 68 over these new drafts. Not sure if you saw the quote, but they asked him if he'd have a light show at the Coliseum, and he said, "I hope not, because the lights might not come back on."
Oh,
I thought that.
No, I did not hear that.
Oh, it's glorious, glorious stuff there. It's great.
Wow. Watching
the future Major League remake just take full form against the ownership on live like interviews now. But Mason Miller at pick 68, I think he's justifiably one of the top closers off the board. I don't know who else went ahead of him closers wise, but Mason Miller, I think, is the real deal.
And that's what I'm looking at when, because again, with single drafts like this, or just two drafts, you just don't know when closers were going. It was Edwin Diaz at 46.
I take Mason Miller.
Evan Phillips at 52, pre-injury, of course. Emmanuel Classe, 58.
Mason Miller.
Josh Hader, 64.
Mason Miller.
Mason Miller, 67.
Yeah, I'd take Miller over all of them, I think.
So is he your number one closer?
Probably. I haven't done any like rankings in season, but I think so. Like, the argument I can understand people saying is, how many games will the A's win? Well, right now, folks, they are winning. So, yeah, like, yeah. Hey, can you tell me right now, how many saves does Edwin Diaz have right now? You can count them on one hand. On
yeah,
one
I saw
hand.
Someone, I saw, I forget, it may have been the Guilds. Somebody tweeted that, well, it wasn't Mason Miller. Well, never mind. Kyle Finnegan has more saves than Edwin Diaz and Josh Hader combined right now.
Yep, Finnegan has, I think, 11 or 12. Yeah, Edwin Diaz has 5 saves. It's been brutal. Class A has 11. He's been good in that regard. But I think just Mason Miller, pure filth. We've talked about on this show before. It's pretty ridiculous what he's doing out there. So I'd have him up top, I think. But
I think I'd go Class A number one still. But
that's fine. I could see an argument there. But, man. Whew.
But, dude, imagine 6 weeks ago saying Mason Miller's your number one closer.
Yeah. Would have gotten laughed out of a lot of rooms.
Yes, you would have. By me.
Yep. We know how well that goes. So, yeah.
Exactly. But no, it's just like, it's especially the reliever market, how much can change so quickly. But Mason Miller has deserved it, man.
Yep. He has deserved it. And there's one here that Cicchini says, Duran's on this. I might have Duran up there. Like Class A, Duran, Miller. That's fair. Duran missed a lot of time with injury, but Duran's came back and looked pretty darn filthy, too.
Yeah, Jawan Duran was the next closer after Mason Miller, actually.
I could see that.
At 75. That. And that was while he was still on the IL. So, again, this was last week. So
that's fair.
Good
a couple more. We don't really need to hit on Altuve. He went up to pick 20 on average. I wouldn't be shocked. If you would have told me he was a first-round pick, I wouldn't have been shocked. He's that good, kind of average and everything else, but that's fine. William Contreras, the GOAT. Understandable, should be higher, but people don't like catchers in the one catcher league, probably hampered that. Tanner Houck, though, average of 310 at the end of draft season, went on an average of 136 in these two drafts. Tanner Houck's been outstanding. There's zero denying that. There's been all kinds of quotes coming out the last couple of days from even his teammates talking about the developments that he's made throughout the last season or so. Would you have gone 136 on Houck, though? Because for me, it's a combination of longevity and past injury history that concerns me a bit, but 136 isn't that expensive either.
That's the thing. It's like, for as good as Tanner Houck has been, 136 seems reasonable. So yeah, I kind of want to come out and say, oh no, that's overpaying, because I have the same concerns as you, Bubba, as the workload. He's the innings pitched for Tanner Houck the last three seasons, 69, 60, and then 106 last season. And really only a 25% carry. Like, he's not blowing people away.
Yeah.
But I mean, still gets a ton of ground balls and controls good. Like, it's been pretty legit. And so I think I'd go with Tanner Houck at 136. Like, that price doesn't seem too wild to me.
I would love him as an SP3 if you had like a certain early starting pitcher strategy. If he's like your SP3 there, that'd be freaking amazing. Like,
pitchers around Tanner Houck: Hunter Green.
I go Houck.
Walker Buehler, we'd go Houck.
I go Houck, yeah.
Verlander.
Houck.
Jomo.
If I need strikeouts, it's Houck. That's team dependent for me. If I need ratios, I go Jomo.
Oh, what about Bryce Miller, 145?
That's a fair one. Bryce Miller's been disgusting so far. Yeah, I go Bryce Miller too. That he's been literally one of the best pitchers in baseball right now.
Bryce Miller, 145, a high of 124 in the Yahoo draft and 167 in the NFBC draft. That kind of feels like a steal.
Yeah. Makes me want to do a gladiator draft all of a sudden.
Oh God, here we go.
I'm not going to though. I have no time right now to do a draft. It's just not going to happen.
I saw the little twinkle in your eye there.
That's the kind of stuff that's intriguing though. You know what else is intriguing, Bluefield? The fallers in drafts. Let's flip over to the red side of things here. And let's kick it off with the guy that hit his second home run of the season on Tuesday night. Off a left-handed pitcher in his first game, not batting seventh or eighth, he led off in a long, long time. And that is when Corbin Carroll, who had an ADP of around 8 at the end of draft season, he had an average pick of 20, same as Jose Altuve in this early season. So far, Carroll's hitting 211 with 2 homers and 8 stolen bases. I wanted nothing to do with Carroll in the first round this past year. I want nothing to do with Corbin Carroll in the second round at this point in the year. So I'd just be out.
Me too. I'm just too worried about the shoulder. Granted, Corbin Carroll has looked better. You just mentioned the home run off a lefty. I think the other night had a couple balls in triple digits exit velocity. So, like, maybe something's starting to come around there. I would just rather take – I mean, the hitter's going right after him. Austin Riley, CJ Abrams, Matt Olson, Bryce Harper. Like, yeah. I'd take those guys over Corbin Carroll right now. I just worry if it wasn't for the shoulder, I would just say this is a cold streak and he'll be fine. Also, if it wasn't for the shoulder, Corbin Carroll would not have an ADP of 20. And I don't think he'd be this bad. So there's
that. The thing is, like, we talk about it even in our, you know, preseason stuff here during drafts. Like, when you want to take your chances, take them later in drafts, not early in drafts. It's kind of like, we already know there's an injury situation here most likely. So
yep.
Be careful. Chris Bassitt, this is a fun one. ADP of 120 in the regular season, 235 in season. And it's been a rough go for Bassitt, who most of us said, oh, this is just steady Eddie. He's going to get you innings, good ratios. That has not been the case. 5.45 ERA, 4.34 xFIP. Strikeouts, almost a strikeout per 9, which is nice, but he's walking a lot of people. It's been a very rough go for Chris Bassitt so far, who looks like a shell of himself, Bloomfield.
Yeah, and even like you said, you took Bassitt, you know, the skills weren't sexy, but you went for the volume. You don't want this volume. This is like Alek Manoah volume.
Yeah.
The 5.45 ERA, 1.68 whip. And the weird thing is, like, the control has just disappeared. Yep. Can't throw strikes. And he's not missing bats. This dude has a 6.5% swing strike. Like, that has to be like single digit percentile in terms of missing bats. Gotta wonder if something's going on with Chris Bassitt. If the skills look so bad. Yeah.
That lack of control makes you feel like something's not there.
Exactly.
It's just a matter of time. So hoping for the best though. Speaking of another guy, Corbin, earmuffs, Mitch Keller averaged 281 in these two drafts. I like get a little blurb on him for first pitch pod on Monday night for Tuesday morning because he threw the 9 innings mm-hmm. on Monday.
Yep.
Man, if he hadn't thrown the 9 innings, that stat line would look real bad on the season. It's been brutal. Strikeouts haven't really been there like they've been in the past. Ratios are not elite like we'd hope for. It's more the old Keller than the new Keller, let's put it that way.
Yeah. That said, so I agree, and we talked about Keller a little bit, I think, on the last show, just saying that the velocity is down a full tick, and he doesn't really have an out pitch, does not have a single pitch over 12% swing strike, which is bad. But he will get you innings, and I think, like, just eatable innings at 281. I don't know. I can kind of see it just with all the pitcher injuries. Chris Bassett. Mitch Keller is better than the streamers we're trying to pick up off the scrap heap at 280. So that's really the case for Mitch Keller. I get it. It's not a great case, but if you're building a team or whatever and trying to avoid streaming pitchers off of waiver wires, I can kind of see it.
Could Brian Hayes drop down to an average of 213 in these two drafts from 123? Dude's got a 53% ground ball rate, one homer, no steals. He's reverted back to Eric Hosmer, per se, than the guy we saw at the end of the first half last year. And that is very troublesome to me. But we saw him flip the switch last year. So I'm like trying to hold out optimism. But, man, a 2% barrel rate, it's just dreadful across the board.
Yeah, and no stolen base attempts. Dealt with, I forget what type of injury, but has been dealing with an injury a little bit for this year, but and the strikeout rate. What's that?
Back injury. Yeah.
Yeah, that's scary. It's probably why he's not running, probably why he's not hitting for power. He's not striking out, but when you don't do the other two things, I get pretty worried. So again, 213 is a well-deserved fall for Ke'Bryan Hayes. I don't, you say he turned around last year, that's certainly within the realm of possibility, but it doesn't look good when you pile on the back injury.
For fun, since we can kind of turn this into another exercise, in 12 team leagues, would you drop Ke'Bryan Hayes? He's one of those guys we talk about that you're not paying attention to his stats. Yep. You just roster him. This is one of them.
Yeah, no, that's a really good call. I don't know what, like, third base, that's my cop out. I don't know what third base replacement level is, but it's probably better than what Ke'Bryan Hayes.
Would you rather have Jordan Westberg or Ke'Bryan Hayes?
I mean, Jordan Westberg.
That's an option in some leagues. That's why I'm asking. What? Would you rather have Jose Miranda or Ke'Bryan Hayes?
Jesus.
Miranda's getting close to 300 right now.
Yeah, I'd go Miranda.
Last one. Would you have Josh H. Smith or Ke'Bryan Hayes?
I go with the H.
Yeah, that's kind of where we're going then. So there's a good chance Hayes is a drop, folks, in your shallower formats.
Now who's going the hitter, the two hitters above Ke'Bryan Hayes in these two drafts at 210 and 212? Two of your favorites, Thairo Estrada and Logan O'Hoppe.
I would take both of those guys in a heartbeat. Why did they go so late? Interesting.
Not
interesting.
In the room, okay. Man.
I know. That's fair. I'm just curious. That's
one catcher league, O'Hoppe. O'Hoppe went 133 in the NFBC and went 292 in the Yahoo.
Okay, that makes sense. That checks out. That makes sense. So
can't explain Thairo, though. No one likes Thairo. We do.
No one likes Thairo. No, they don't. He's actually playing pretty well right now. Craig Kimbrell, he's struggled. I don't have a whole lot there. Michael King, I want to get your thoughts on here. Went on an average of 206 in these two drafts, which is very, very interesting. Outside of like a really good start against Milwaukee, he's been kind of getting hit around a bit. Strikeouts have been okay, but the walks have been a big issue with Michael King. I think both of us kind of like, we liked him, but we had our concerns with him because, you know, he's never done this before type thing this year. What would you do in a draft like this?
I'm staying off because I liked Michael King. I just thought I was worried about the workload, and I thought the per inning stuff would be pretty good. Michael King's almost halfway to the innings pitch total of what he threw last year. 42 innings through 104 last year. And so you think you conceivably get like 140 maybe. He's already pitched a third of his innings. And I know this doesn't count for this league, but I don't see the per inning stuff turning around very quickly. And so like, this is not the same pitcher that we saw in New York, and you tack on the workload concerns that I had entering the season, and I think I'm out.
Yeah, I'm with you there 100%. Rodon's the guy we were both kind of out on. I want to ask you about Zach Eflin, though, because that's a guy I know you do like in Zach Eflin, or at least in draft season. You like Zach Eflin. I want to speak for you now. ADP of 65 to end draft season. in these two drafts, he had an average of 105. What are you seeing when you look at Zach Eflin? Because like he's doing okay, but not what we saw last year, to put it nicely.
He's fine. I really like this price, Eflin, 105. I still think he's a borderline top 15 starting pitcher. Really, the skills aren't too far off what we saw last year. If you look at the swing strike and the ball rate, and Eflin, I know it was against the White Sox today, but pitched today, 7 innings, 1 run, only 3 Ks, but no walks. I think he'll be fine.
All right. What if I told you can get a batting average of 234 with 4 home runs, 13 runs scored, 15 RBIs with a 12.7% barrel rate and a 55% hard hit rate, which is enticing, but a 50% ground ball rate to really top it off. And you could have got him in a pick of 33 to end the regular draft season, or at even 52 in these redrafts. And his name's Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I think 52 is still too crazy.
Vlad drew the ire, I think, more than any other player when I tweeted this out leading up to the podcast. God, he just looks so bad. He looks so bad. I agree. I don't think he's a top 50 player either. I probably wouldn't go there until 60, 75, something like that.
Joe Rico, Vlad stinks. Yep. That's your resident Jays guy. Yeah, he spoke for the crowd. Now this one, there's going to be surprises every time we see a Bloom Board, Ryan. This one stood out to me in a massive way. Andrés Muñoz had an ADP of 64 at the end of draft season. Okay, maybe that's too early. You know, it's a 5-6 turn and a 15, whatever. But all the way down to 97, which seemed crazy to me. Like, we know he's the primary closer, but he'll work more high leverage. Matt Brash isn't anywhere to be seen. Like, Munoz is still getting saves. He got, like, 2 last week alone. To see him drop this far, was that very surprising to you?
I think the room kind of punted closers after the top guys. So like Alexis Diaz went 94. Clay Holmes, who I think already has over 10 saves, went 86. Ryan Helsley, 86. Munoz, 97. Robert Suarez went 102. So I think the room just kind of was not as aggressive on closers than the main event wildness before the season. That, I think that's all this is. I think Munoz is, I mean, he's got like a 2 ERA.
Yeah.
And he's mostly the guy in Seattle. He hasn't had every ninth inning opportunity, but he's had most. And yeah, I think it's just the room pushing closers down.
And then like when we look at the Minnesota or the Seattle rotation, they're going to give a lot of save chances, you'd think, on paper compared to some other teams. Yes. Helsley might get traded, for crying out loud. Like, there's a lot of factors involved in my head, but who knows if my head's worth factoring anything. Tyro Estrada, we don't really have to talk about him because people just think I'm a homer. Like, I still think 210 is ridiculous, like beyond insane to me. But let's go to these last couple guys before we hit some listener questions here. Bo Bichette, ADP of 41 in draft season, down to 63 on these two drafts on average. And in reality, Ryan, 63 might be too generous for a guy hitting 189 with 1 homer and 3 stolen bases. He's only striking out 16%, which is nice, but a 2% barrel rate, that is not ideal. It's at a 53% ground ball rate. So I don't know, man, is 63 even on the board?
Agreed. It's been brutal for Bo Bichette. The 2 barrels is just awful. I don't think so either. I don't think I'd go for it here. So just, again, point of reference with Bo Bichette, 63. 380p, Anthony Volpe at 61. That's another 20. That's who I was thinking of earlier. That those 22, 23-year-olds in that second season taking a major jump forward. I would take Anthony Volpe over Bo Bichette right now.
Okay.
Yeah. Randy Arozarena. I know, different position, but your guy Randy going at 62.
Yeah. Randy's heating up too. Like, I was never worried. At the end, Randy's a 2020 guy year in and year out. So I'm fine there.
How about this one? O'Neill Cruz versus Bo Bichette went. Oh, they are right now. Oh, okay. Never mind.
That's fine. It's a good segue. I would say no on O'Neill Cruz. I would take Bichette, because we're going to talk about O'Neill Cruz. He had a 47 ADP at the end of the preseason. Bichette had a 41. Now Bichette 63. O'Neill Cruz is 71. O'Neill Cruz is platooning right now. He's not even starting versus left-handed pitching. That terrifies me.
But he's still been a lot better than Bichette. Even if he plays half the time
or the quarters of the time. The downhill swing has been dramatic the last few weeks.
Real quick, couple good notes that we didn't hit from Michael Cicchini and from Kevin Hastings in the chat. Bichette has one pulled fly ball all season. Kevin says Bo is not pulling the ball.
It's hard to pull fly balls when you hit a 53% ground ball rate. Like, what's with all these Blue Jays hitting the ball on the ground? This is insane.
If you take one thing away from our pod tonight, you can't hit a fly ball on a ground ball.
Yeah, come on, kids. It's physics.
I'd take O'Neill Cruz over Bichette. I would. Even with the platoon, he at least has 5 homers, 3 steals, 7 barrels. He runs. He's hitting .244. Like, yeah, the strikeout rate is absurd, but like he's at least doing something.
FPAS beer bet, Cruz versus Bichette, fantasy pros or fantasy Razzball play rater in a season.
We're doing it.
Yeah, I'm offering it up.
Yeah, I'll do that. I'll do
Bichette versus Cruz. I'll take Bichette. You take Cruz.
All right, hold on. I gotta write this down.
Yeah, that's my bet
sheet here. Do we need to revisit the bet sheet?
Yeah, you should. Joe Arrico says Cruz easy, but I say that's probably a lot of his
That's just Joe rage commenting from Canada up there against Bo Bichette. I'm joking. Know what one of our bets was as I pull the sheet back up? My Goldie against your Christian Walker.
I think that's looking pretty good right now. Almost landsliding. It's only May 7th. Like, Christian Walker could probably not play the rest of the season and still might beat you.
Shut up, man. All right, let's keep going. Wait, that's the last name, isn't it?
No, last one I wanted to bring him up because some people mentioned him earlier is Christian Encarnacion Strand. ADP of 115. He was climbing towards the end when they found out he's going to play every day, down to 169 over these last two drafts that we're seeing here. And I think it's just interesting to look at Strand because, A, he had the hand injury that kept him out for a few days. He's back from that. He's still playing every day. The production is just dreadful. .95 average, 2 homers. His big issue also is he's a 47% ground ball dude. That needs to change, but I don't know. I still have optimism in a guy like CES.
Yeah, I mean, it's just funny how BABIP works. Exact same K rate, exact same swinging strike rate for Encarnacion Strand. Hit .270 last year, hit .195 so far this season. I don't know. I just don't. There's not the track record for CES to, like, for me to just assume he's going to get better from here. So for me, I think 169 even is probably too expensive. But I mean, other first baseman going around there. Actually, right next to him is Rhys Hoskins.
I'd probably take Hoskins.
I'd probably take Hoskins. Michael Bush right before CES.
I'd take CES over Bush.
See if I can find another first baseman here.
Would you take Paul Goldschmidt or CES?
Yeah. Goldschmidt. God damn it. Yeah, I'd take Old Schmidt. Where'd he go? Where'd he go in this damn thing?
I'll look in the 300s, probably.
90, my man. 90. Let's go. Look in the 300s. If this draft was done in another month, it might be the 300s.
That's great. Okay. All right. Any final thoughts on the Bloom board here? It's fun just to see, like, the I guess you say recency bias is the easy way to describe this, but it's legit. You're looking at numbers. Guys have done good. Guys have done bad. Regression, this, that, and the other. Any final thoughts on this little exercise right here?
No, it's interesting.
Besides, like Arrico says, the Jays lineup stinks because they're on the board.
Yeah, and Paul Goldschmidt as well. Just interesting to kind of, weigh. I bet if you look at, like, rest of season projections for the guys on the red side, the fallers, those are your buying opportunities because of recency bias. I talk about how much has changed in 5 or 6 weeks. Do you know how much is going to change these next 5 or 6 weeks, these next 2 to 3 months? So much is going to change.
100%.
So it's, I don't know. It's interesting to kind of take stock in where guys are at now versus where they were at earlier this season. So hopefully all enjoyed this little shindig here.
All right. John Wilder had a question for us. He says, any injured players you would hold in the 15-team league but cut in a 12, no IL spot, so an NFBC-style format? I know we talked about some guys like Stephen Kwan and others early on there, Wilson Contreras. Would you cut Wilson in a 15 also? Yeah? Would we say that?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Then I'm going to name off some names here just for fun. You're keeping them. Christian Yelich, man, he's still not even on a rehab assignment.
Yep, is he alive?
You've held him this long. He's just rehabbing really slowly. So what about Gerrit Cole?
Out till mid-June?
He's a hold. At least. That's a hold. Kodai Senga is probably coming back at the end of May, so you hold there. Royce Lewis is back soon. You're going to hold there. Nolan Jones. Let's have fun with that one.
Are you saying 12s or 15s?
Well, would you keep him in 12 or would you keep him in 15s? Both? Not. What would you do?
So the problem is I'm going to say hold for all these guys. What if you have three, four of them?
Yeah, that's where it's very dependent. Very, very dependent. Let's have some more. Tristan Casas. We talked about him before, but what would you do with Tristan Casas?
I would drop Casas.
In 15s and 12s?
Yeah.
Merrill Kelly, drop them both?
Yes. Already have dropped him in 15s.
Let's talk. Most of these guys I'm looking at are coming back really soon. Eduardo Rodriguez is still probably out another 4 weeks at least.
Who?
Eduardo Rodriguez.
Cut.
Yep, I already cut him when it happened last time.
I think I'd cut Gavin Nolan Jones in 12s, by the way. Yep. I don't think I answered that, but I don't know what you would do, but I think I'd cut.
If I have room to hold, I would hold, but I can understand the cut if you're squeezed in a no IL format. What about Gavin Williams, who had another setback?
No, he's gone.
Yeah, he's gone. I dropped him immediately when that second setback took place. He was gonzo. Francisco Alvarez.
He's a drop.
Yeah, you got about at least six more weeks at least with him.
And with these, I'm assuming you've got two or three other IL guys. So
yep. Other than that, that's kind of the main ones that stand out to me. Is there anybody? I can't really think of anybody else off the top of my head. So
Mike Trout.
Those would be some. What was that? Trout. Yeah, what would you do with Trout? Good question.
I'd hold until we get more info. I'd do as good as I can.
I think the initial stuff we saw was almost like what we talked about last week. He had the surgery, the minimal surgery. They're saying 4 to 6 weeks. If that's what it is, I hold. I'm holding. Now, if that changes, there's any setbacks in place there, you'd probably run for the hills. But I'm with you on that with Trout. I'd hold if you could a little bit longer.
I like Pat in the chat saying, would have been funny if you were like Eduardo Rodriguez, never heard of him. Yeah. I will fully admit to when I have never heard of someone when Bubba brings them up. But
yeah, Rotary Munoz, made up names when he told me.
Yeah. Luckily, that wasn't on the pod. That was a text. I just thought you were making shit up, so I had to search the fab things.
Yeah. And luckily, hopefully, no one started him on Monday. That's all I'm going to say. He was there for last week, not against the Dodgers. You were not starting him against the Dodgers. That was not a recommendation. So,
what about this from Kevin? If we're talking about kind of along the lines of holding, what about Devin Williams? If you have a fairly healthy team, I would consider picking up Devin
Williams. If you have a healthy team, I'm cool with picking him up. I could definitely see the appeal on that one. That is a good point. So we could actually flip the script here real quick. I'll do a fun little exercise, pulling up the OCs, and I'll just scroll for IL players and tell me what you think on these ones. Because Wilson Contreras is gone. Freddy Peralta suspended. Gabriel Montero's day-to-day, so that doesn't really count. Let's get some of the fun ones. The Devin Williams is a good one. Bobby Miller. I don't even know how long Bobby Miller's out for still. Feels like a while, no?
Yeah, he just disappeared.
Grayson Rodriguez should be back soon. Trey Turner, we're keeping. Lazardo's back soon. Javier's back soon. Ryan Pepio's going to the IL, so you don't want that. There's like a slew of them right there. We'll do one more page before I just lose everybody's interest here.
I don't even know what you're talking about at this point.
Yeah, it's fine. Take a nap. I'll take care of this. I'll be back shortly. But, that's the main guys. Most of these guys are actually coming back really soon, which is good. What about Zach Geloff? Zach Geloff has no timetable to return yet with his oblique injury.
Here we go. That might be the one bet I win over you, but it will be voided.
Yes.
Due to injury. I would drop Geloff.
You drop Geloff.
No information on when he's coming back? No.
Yeah, no information yet. It's very sketch.
Yeah.
Here's a fun one. Chaz McCormick, would you hold or drop?
Compared to most of the other guys that you brought up, I would drop.
Yeah, I'm thinking he's a drop. Masataka Yoshida, I would drop.
Yeah.
He's got the ligament injury in his thumb.
Yes.
So that's another one we did not
mention. Where are you pulling these names from? What are you
doing? I'm just scrolling the players list on NFBC because I can easily see ILs and stop and look at their names.
Gotcha. Okay.
See, I just using my brain here. Every once in a while, I can do something right. We don't want Cody Bradford. Last page, I promise. And then we'll move on. Yeah, you're not doing Matt McClain.
The names aren't going to get better, I don't think, from
Chris here. Bryant.
No.
Okay, just checking. See, getting the pulse of the room real quick. Okay, we'll stop there. We'll call it a good one on that one. All right, next question for you here from, stop laughing at me, Corbin Young. Jared Jones is too low, skills of an ace. Renel Blanco is going to be the most valuable Astros pitcher in 2024. And I can't look at the fallers because there's somebody the third down the list there in Mitch Keller. So more of a statement from Corbin Young.
Bold statement on Renel Blanco. I like it.
Yep. Taylor Johnson's got a good one here. So who are the top three most likely guys currently in the red that regain their form and finish around their offseason ADP?
I'll go Thairo Estrada. I'll take one from you.
I agree.
I'll say, it's tough. Zach Eflin.
Yep.
And Andres Munoz.
I was going to go Thairo, Eflin, and CES. So, Kevin Hastings thinks Rodon.
Yeah, Rodon's interesting. It's wild that Rodon, we didn't really talk about him, but dropped from 121 to 196 with I don't know what his ERA is. It's pretty damn good.
It's been rough.
These drafters look at the same skills we do, so I get it.
Chuck at Chuck_Proc says Javier Assad was a guy featured on a recent Bloomberg. Although he doesn't have much K upside, he has a sub-3 ERA and 185 career innings. How is he having so much success at preventing runs, and can he maintain his value as a back-end rotation spot? I'm just going to first say, Chuck, before Ryan gives you the actual stats here, we've talked about this for a long time. He's a very much pitch-to-contact guy, and he continues to get the job done. He limits the hard contact. I'm scared it's going to flip one day, but I have him in a lot of draft and holds. He's very serviceable. He's just I just don't think it's going to be great. Let's put it that way.
I'm of the belief. So agreed. He has pitched to contact. I'm of the belief that pitchers cannot, as unintuitive as this sounds, pitchers don't have much control over the quality of contact against them. They can control ground ball, fly ball, but our studies at Baseball HQ for years have shown they cannot really control the quality of contact against them. Javier Assad, the reason why he's not allowing runs is because he's stranding 80 to 90% of base runners every single year, which for a pitch to contact guy, I feel like he's flipped heads 3 years in a row. And I just don't see that continuing. If Assad struck out a ton of dudes and, was that good? Yes, you can strand runners like that, but this is not that guy. So, I obviously am not a big fan.
Yeah, I'd say stream him and enjoy it while you can, but eventually that it's got to hit the wall, it feels like. So
he's a streamer for me.
Martin Sikulski says, when will the consensus come to their senses on Vladito? This isn't a top 50 guy. Concur. And then our buddy Michael Cicchini, who's also in the chat here, says, Munoz seems weird. He's been good, plus Brash is injured. We agree. How far did Bregman and Goldie fall?
Ooh. Bringing up Goldie again, aren't we?
Yeah, this wasn't even me. It's straight up.
Goldschmidt 91. I forget what his preseason ADP was, but not too far. Like, that's not that big of a fall.
No, it's not.
I want to say Goldie was in the 70s preseason. Bregman just behind Goldschmidt actually at an ADP of 98, which is a bigger fall.
That's pretty close. I feel like he was close to 90 to 100 too. I feel like he didn't fall a ton. And then what about where did Adames and Paredes rise to?
Big Willie rose to 131. Okay. And actually 113 in the NFBC draft.
So he went really up there. Good.
And who was the other guy?
Isak Paredes.
Isak, 145.
Nice.
So right around, is there a first baseman around there? There is not. Right ahead of Ryan Mountcastle.
CES is 169. So
yep.
something along those lines there. And then we had one starred question in the chat. Jeff Metziff says, biggest power bat to be called up before June 15th. I think we probably saw him if Lo Perfido could ever hit the baseball.
Yeah. Off the top of my head, I'm not sure. I am not in the prospect game.
Yeah, I am not in the prospect game either, so I cannot help you on that one. Sorry.
that was helpful.
Joe Rico says Aurelvis Luis Martinez, so that'd be one to keep in mind. Yeah, I'm just, as you can tell, we don't like drafting them. We really don't spend a lot of money on them when they come up in Fab. So, like, that's just not my bag on this one. So, sorry. All right, Bloomfield, final thoughts. That was a fun one. Bloomboard, again, comes through.
Yeah, that was fun. One last quick one from Pat in the chat. Positions aside, Kowser or Westberg? I'd go Westberg.
Westberg as well, yes.
All right, cool. 100%. Yeah, that's all I got. We'll do just do it again on Thursday. Fab preview on Thursday.
Week 8, Fab. Week 8, folks. We are moving through the season already. Like, don't watch now, but we are flying through this one. And thanks, y'all, for hanging out in the chat, as always, and everyone listening. We appreciate y'all. We'll be back with you guys Thursday, as usual. But for now, make sure you check out Ryan on the Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm at BD Entrick, and until next time, this is Bubba and the Bloom, episode 132. Catch y'all later. Thank you.